Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the good life. Welcome to the good life.
The wait is over.
Welcome to the good life.
And after all the talk, all I gotta say is,
welcome to the good life.
You're welcome. You're all welcome. Like we...
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode number 20 of the Good Life Radio Show. I'm pretty sure everyone can hear the excitement in my voice. Numerous reasons why I'm on cloud 50 right now. First off, because the true love of my life are the New York Yankees and the University of Kentucky basketball. My boys made it to the Final Four in New Orleans, and I'll be heading down there. More on that later on. All you haters, I'm just curious what you're going to do. All the losers on Facebook and Twitter and texting me. This started out with 68 teams. You can only cry about three teams now. All the Duke fans, Mike Padmore, Justin Walker, all these people who have to pick on every team. They want to root for UConn, Iowa State, Indiana, Baylor. I want to know what you're going to do. I'm just curious. And the giddiness in my voice when we beat Baylor. And to play against Louisville next game and Rick Pitino, the Benedict Arnold of all coaches, one of the men who I despise him more than any, maybe top five humans alive. A few years ago when Bin Laden and Saddam Hussein were alive, Pitino was right under them, sometimes more than them. We didn't get into that today. But I'm a little more giddy today because I'm gonna interview my idol. Not everyone knows what I do in my real job. This is my side funness, whatever you want to call it. I set out to interview people I know, Schaub, Canty, Daniel Orton, whatever. And then I started just reaching out to a few other people. I got to interview Kamala and other football players and all different aspects of the wrestlers. It's awesome. I got to interview Josh Booty and Tim Couch. But today, I'm going to be interviewing Rick Meyer from Notre Dame, my hero, my idol. But let me introduce the co-host today. He's finally back from a recruiting trip in Maryland. Let's all welcome to the show the original co-host and hands down, the only person who really knows my agony and my joy when a team wins, the person who lives and dies with their teams as much as me. Our reason we're both single is because we can never love anyone as much as we love our sport teams. Welcome to the good life, my man Chuck. Chuck, thank you for coming back to the good life. What's good, buddy?
How's those internet motherfuckers doing today?
Chuck, how you doing?
I'm doing great. My brackets are done. Florida's out. I'm all, you know, I was in 100 percentile. Now I'm done. So
you are, Chuck. When the Elite Eight happened, you were what were you? What was your percentage when the Elite Eight came on? Because you were high up there.
I started out at 86%, and then when the Elite Eight happened, I was at 99. And then I actually reached 100 percentile.
And now, what are you?
I haven't looked yet. I'm not gonna look.
It's funny, people text me, because you and I, we can say, Chuck, we're two of the biggest sport losers ever. We'd rather hang out and watch a sport game than go out and hang out with hot chicks. And that's the truth, and it's sad. It's the reason we're single. When people text me, oh, how's your bracket? My bracket's perfect, because Kentucky's still playing. I can care less about any other thing. My final four, I had Carolina, Ohio State, Missouri, Kentucky. Final, Kentucky 72, Ohio State 63. So my final can still happen. I can care less how they get there, who they get there, as long as they win. Chuck, I actually felt bad for you. Tell me about, first of all, I want to hear about Maryland. Tell about Maryland. I want to hear, what'd you feel? Because you're a University of Florida fan. You and Nikki Dasha, and Nikki broke his phone, which makes me happy because I do the same thing. What was going through your mind? You were at a more baseball tournament in Maryland, and you're checking Florida score. Let me hear.
We were actually watching Planet of the Apes with Jackson. It was a great movie, by the way.
Okay.
I want to get the Caesar.
Okay.
But my reaction was, on the bus, and they're up by 8 at halftime, so I'm feeling good. I wasn't watching the game. I was just following on my iPad. Then
okay.
I see they're up 13. You know, game's about to be over. Then, next thing you know, I hear, like, rumblings in the back. The kids are talking about it. I go, Nick, what's the score? They're up by 2. What? And all of a sudden, Nick didn't answer. I told him keep me up there. He didn't answer, so I heard they lost. I was upset. Not nearly how he was, but it's just heartbreaking because they were on such a great run.
They were. You know, you said in the beginning of the year, you and I talked about it. about living by the three, dying by three. You knew Florida. All right, now, Chuck, everything goes on hold right now, okay, Chuck? The reason we're doing the show early on right now, we're going to introduce right now my idol, one of the greatest players ever to come out of the University of Notre Dame. Number two overall pick, my favorite player of all time. Welcome to the Good Life Radio Show with Mike and Chuck, Rick Meyer. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Rick, thank you for giving us a couple minutes of your time. This is, I'm going to be honest, an honor. I have a lot of friends who are in the radio business, and I told you what I did in the emails, so I just do this on the side for fun. And they always said, listen, when you interview somebody, because I've interviewed Matt Schaub, Tim Couch, I've interviewed a ton of people, it's like, don't sound too excited. I can't even hold it in. To interview Rick Meyer, this is tops. All right, Rick, I appreciate you calling in. I'll get right to the interview. When did you realize...
It's nice to you to say that.
This is the coolest thing I've ever done. When did you realize that football, it wasn't just a sport, and I ask this to everybody, when did you know it was going to be your livelihood and a way to support your family? Was there a defining moment?
Well, I didn't know until the check cleared, you know, but I think you start the process at some point, just getting recruited to the bigger colleges, and not that that's the only way to make a living playing. You could come out of small ones too, but I'd say late in high school years, I started getting offers all over, and then I felt like, man, if one of these places, which were all good places, is a good fit for me and things go well, then the next step is right there. So I don't know, I was probably close to 20 when it seemed like it was likely if I stayed healthy and stuff, but you just never know.
Now, Rick, you grew up in Indiana, and I've read all the stuff about you, obviously. It sounds a little creepy, but how did Michigan even have a shot to get you, and what was the deciding factor between Notre Dame and becoming a Wolverine?
As a kid, I was a huge fan of Michigan. My dad was from Ypsilanti. My mom was from Detroit area. My grandparents lived up near Pontiac, close to the Silverdome. So Thanksgiving, you know, weekends, every fall we would be up there. I was in those years, like, you know, 10, 12, 13 years old, watching the Lions play and Michigan and Tigers. Those were all my teams. So that's kind of brainwashing from the old man mostly. But it was kind of always the team that I had the posters on the wall, you know, Bo Schembechler and Harbaugh and guys that I looked up to when I was going through playing high school ball and stuff. And really it was hard at the end, but the timing of, you know, it wouldn't have been a bad decision, but Notre Dame was just a little bit better timing for me since they were coming off a national championship and most of the guys were coming back. So I felt like we were going to have a solid team for years.
Which you did. Now you take over as the Irish starting quarterback. You beat Michigan your first game. Sports Illustrated put you on the cover as the Golden Boy. Describe the mayhem that was on campus. You beat your boyhood team, and now you're on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Was that just shell shock? How was that on campus?
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit of a blur, really. You don't really realize. I didn't have a lot of time to think about it. You know, it's a weekly kind of routine, and you're bang, 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 and then you have a game. And it was very cool. I mean, I was young, and, you know, at those ages, you don't even get nervous. I mean, none of that stuff even affects you hardly, but it was fun. And it, looking back, it was a really big deal. But, God, there was so much attention. We were number one, and Michigan was two, or they were one, and we were two. And it was one of those kind of games. And, I mean, every magazine was there. But to be on the front of that one was kind of a cool thing. And I remember Rocket told me when the magazine came out, he goes, man, you will sign every one of those, too. And he had been going through that with people sending them to him. And I swear, to this day, I get them from people all over the world. It's not a lot of them, but it's a steady kind of once a week or so I see an SI come through from 100 years ago, and it's one of those things that won't go away.
Now, Rick.
Hey, Rick, I got a question. Yeah. First of all, I just want to say I'm very honored as a sports fan to be interviewing a guy like you. But
thank you.
I don't know, like, because this year it's kind of similar to the draft, I feel like, with you and Drew and Andrew and RG3. How hectic was that process? That whole process going up before the draft day, like, how was your nerves and how crazy was that?
You know, it's a lot different now. I didn't even go to New York. I didn't want to go to New York. I wanted to be at home with my friends, my family on kind of my terms. And when the call came, we took it, and then we kind of did whatever interviews and things we needed to do, and just waited for directions on what the flight stuff and the next steps were. But now, hell, it's like a media extravaganza, as every sport has gone, you know, from just Super Bowl coverage all the way down to, you know, combine stuff. And you got Andrew Luck's workout, like, on live, you know, feed on online and stuff the other day. So I suppose the microscope is a little more intense now. But, you know, that, it was a great – it was a fun time. Fortunately for me, I was done with school. I finished early. I didn't have to really focus on all that stuff anymore. So I could sort of do the travel and some of the things I needed to do. And I became buddies with Drew because we were going through the same thing at the same time. Like these guys, you know, this year, I'm sure they're overlapping and all kinds of stuff. So it's an interesting process, but I'd have to think it's much, much more intense now. You know, hell, you can't go anywhere without a camera, phones, and the stuff travels so quickly now. That would have been a whole nother element to it. So,
now, Rick,
do you have any, like, advice for them, too, since, like, you guys were so similar, like, with you and Drew and Andrew and RG3? Like you're always compared with each other. Like, you have any advice for those two, like, if they were listening? They were one of the thousands.
Well, I think they've had plenty of good advice, and I've heard both those guys talk a lot, and they're really impressive and bright guys. And they're apparently, you know, they're being kind of taken through this by guys that know what they're doing, but you just got to be yourself, you know, and there's some politics and there's things you have to say and things you have to do and things, places you need to attend and stuff because you just need to. But in the end, I mean, you got to play. And, you know, it's funny, Drew and I, he's probably as close a friend as that I have. I mean, this is 20 years later almost. And you are forever linked. Now, other things have to sync up. You know, our wives were good friends, and there's other that we had similar interests, and there's a lot of things. Kids are the same age, a lot of that kind of stuff. But so these two guys, I mean, they're going to be, you know, they'll be compared, and it's competitive. But, you know, no one understands the other guy more than the other one. So they kind of, they're the only two going through it quite the same way.
Now, Rick, before we do the interview, I just want to tell you, usually Chuck and I do the show together, obviously, at the studio, my house, but Chuck was too lazy to drive the 6 blocks, so we're just gonna jump in whenever we have questions. So it's gonna be
come
a
on,
unorthodox.
Chuck.
I'm sorry.
<Chuck's lazy. laughs> All right, Rick, you leave the Irish. You have the most points, all-time passing touchdowns, so many records. You get drafted 2 overall. Bill Walsh calls you the next Joe Montana. Were those expectations just unrealistic to be called that before you even played?
Well, he was being very complimentary, and I always appreciated that. And that helped me, but it also hurt me in certain ways because there's no other Joe Montana. I mean, that's just that was a special career he had and his style. I always looked up to him, and if I had to pick one guy, that'd be the guy. Because as cool as Joe always appeared and as calm, and he had great teams, and it was just, you know, they were just carving people up. I mean, that's the dream scenario. But he earned it. And I think if there's anybody that's close, it seems like Tom Brady's kind of had that magic touch and gotten out of some, you know, made the key play when you have to. But you know, I don't know. I don't regret any of that part. You know, there's so many circumstances that affect the results, and there's tons of guys that are talented and have tons of ability, and you know, there's just hard teams to be on and look good playing for at times. And that's just as simple as it is. But, you know, it's, you know, you could be a starting pitcher on a bad team and be fine. For the most part, you can, you know, kind of control the matchups, but they need help too. But I mean, the quarterback's toughest thing in sport. And if the whole group's not on the same page, it's tough, real tough.
Yeah, it is. Now, Rick, what was the first thing you splurged on your contract with? Your first big splurge. I like to ask everyone what's the first thing they bought.
You know, I've thought of that. I mean, I don't have an answer for that. I didn't do anything crazy. You know, my parents, as time went on, you know, I helped with certain things. And I don't know. I mean, it wasn't like big cars and jewelry and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that wasn't my style, but I guess I was just relieved. I mean, I could help other people some and family members and stuff that whenever I needed it, you know, and that was a relief. But I can't tell you there's some prized possession that came right away.
I know Chuck has more questions, but do you know, this is the truth. I told my mom today that I'm going to interview you. My mom, no, this is the truth. Do you know how much she dislikes you? When you, I told the same thing to Tim Couch. You and Tim Couch are my two favorite players. I just interviewed Couch last week. Right now I can go on eBay, on any site, and just buy a Rick Meyer jersey from any team. 15 years ago, 18 years, you couldn't do that. I remember my mom was on the phone with the Seattle Seahawks trying to get a jersey. I'll never forget how coming in, I was 10 years old. And she had to order, and it was impossible. She hated you. Every team you went to, she had to order me a jersey, a Rick Meyer. I have the Rick Meyer Bears jersey, the Seahawks jersey. Never the Jets jersey. I would never wear that. All right, Chuck, you got a question for him?
No, I'm a diehard Jets fan, Rick. I actually was growing up, and I remember when they got you, and I was actually pretty excited because Vinny Testaverde went down, and it was you and Ray Lucas. Now, what happened with that? Because I knew you started the year as the quarterback, right? And they ended up going with Ray Lucas.
Well,
I was kind of fine.
Vinny was there. He ruptured his Achilles in the first regular season game. I got there with two preseason games to go. I got traded during training camp, so. Oh, God. So I think we played the Giants, and I think it was the Giant game, the last preseason game, and I had one of those, like, everything worked kind of moments, you know, like threw three touchdowns and extra points and all kinds of stuff at the end. It was just like a great kind of way to finish preseason and go into the regular season. Vinny blows his Achilles in, like, the second quarter of the first game, and then Tom Tupa was the two, and – Exactly, and the way Parcells did it, it just kind of saved the spot. Now, in the case of something happened in the game and you lost a guy, you kind of had to figure out what you wanted to do. If I'd have gone in the game, then somebody else would have had to punt. So Tom would have been. Yeah, so, you know, you're rolling the dice a little bit, but a lot of times it doesn't really matter. But so Tom played. Tom, for never getting any reps, and, you know, he knew the system because he'd been around these guys for a while. He did fine, and then I get in there, and things – we didn't finish the game off, or, you know, it was kind of a tough kind of environment to get thrown into. But then we go to Buffalo, and, you know, I'm starting. I started probably 7 or 8 or something games, and it's just, you know, Krabat breaks his, I think it was a shoulder, maybe it was an ankle. So he had some injury. He was out. We had kind of just, you know, and I think, you know, they had been to the AFC Championship game the year before, so they were the team to beat, and it just wasn't going well. We have our bye. We're playing Indy, who at the time was really bad on defense. And Parcells tells me in the locker room before the game at the stadium that Ray's going to start. This is after this is the best I've ever felt. Yeah, I mean, a whole off week, you know, an extra week of practice, I finally felt like, okay, I'm caught up here. I got to, you know, this is a completely different offense to me, and it was just, there was a lot of odd terminology and stuff, so then Ray, you know, Ray plays, and I've never, you know, seen that scenario where they tell you at the stadium I prepared as a starter for the whole 2 months, you know, and you know, we win the game, and, you know, Ray and I got along fine, everything, you know, it was just, he was probably more uncomfortable with it than I was. It was just a weird, odd kind of thing. But so he finished out the season. I might have played a little bit here and there. He got hit a few times, and I'd go out. But that was a one-and-done deal. Actually, Bill left at the end of that season, and the plan was for Belichick to take over, but he had a better idea, you know.
Yeah, he had other ideas in mind.
another case of Jets dysfunction right there, telling them, not even during the bye week, just the day before. That just makes no sense. I can't believe they did that. Yeah.
Well,
Chuck,
I mean,
don't get all upset, Chuck.
I personally I thought it was unfair to me, but I mean, you know, Parcells he gave me a shot. He knew me from all the pre-draft stuff and all that, and it was just funny that we actually wound up together. But you know, there's pressure in that town, obviously, and it wasn't going well, so he decided to change it up, and you know, it kind of worked. I mean, the team got a little kind of fire, and it just kind of, people were kind of rallying with Ray, and mm-hmm. Just made it hard for me, but I mean, I'm just one guy. So that was 2000 or the 99 season. But you know, we're standing out in front of the house when the clock strikes midnight on January 31st thinking the world's going to end. So we had, you know, that was an odd. Everything about that fall was weird, but yeah, I don't know. That was my one and only team like that, you know, all the way east. But I had seven different teams, and that was kind of a wild fall.
Now, Rick, I just want to go back to your rookie season real quick. In Seattle, you start as a rookie. You play phenomenal. Was it true, because I read this, I don't know if I saw it on YouTube or read it somewhere, is it true that Seattle limited the playbook for you and you only, like, had a few plays instead of the entire playbook? Was that true, your rookie year?
Nah. Well, I mean, you can always say that there's always more. I mean, you can every team's got, like, an evolution throughout the season where you can just kind of keep adding. I mean, I came into camp, it was 2 weeks late. You know, this was the first year of the salary cap. It was a contract kind of stuff, which I hate. You know, all players hate. You don't want to miss time based on that, you know, on that stuff. But it got sorted out and everything, and I get in there late, and you know, I'm going to play. So I get thrown in there. Yeah, this has happened to me several times, you know, where you kind of get inserted without a complete understanding of all the weapons and all the stuff. So, you know, there was a scaled-down version of what maybe the same guys did later in the year or the following year, but that staff was fired and after two seasons, and then you start over. So, you know, I got there in 93. In 92, they were 2-14 mm-hmm. and trying to put it back together, you know, and had an owner that wasn't the most popular guy in town because he's following the Nordstrom family, which was the most popular people in town. And so, you know, that's life in the fast lane.
Now, Rick, were you shocked that you were traded to Chicago? Because they gave him a first round pick.
Yeah, I had it's not like Tebow, but I mean when they said this the other day, it kind of gave me a flashback. I mean, I had input on which team. I could have gone to Atlanta,
okay.
which was running like a run and shoot style stuff, and that was fine. But it was a dying breed, and then Chicago's close to home, and I didn't know once that personally, but you know. Matt Cavanaugh was the coordinator and teaching the offense, and he was a guy that played the position and knew the West Coast stuff. So I was excited to kind of dive into that. And I, you know, that whole thing happens. And then within a few weeks, they re-sign Eric Kramer, who was the guy the year before and got injured, had back surgery. And, you know, the minute he came back, it was like, it sort of divided the offensive guys a little bit because a lot of them had played with him and were pulling, hey, it's a great story if he's healthy enough to play. But it kind of hurt me in that we didn't have complete clarity as to who was going to do what. I mean, he could just walk right back into the language and be fine. He just had to get his health right, which he did. And I don't know. It's a little how I look at like Tebow being behind Sanchez right now. I mean, that's a pretty big distraction for the guy who's the starter.
Yeah, you know what? I'm glad you called in. You called in today. We've been working on this for a week or two to get you on the show. I'm glad you brought up Tebow because I'm a Giants fan. Chuck's a huge Jet fan, and sports radio here in New York, you know, it's insane. It's 24 hours. We have WFAN and ESPN Radio nonstop, and all it's been about is Sanchez and Tebow. For me personally, I don't know why they brought Tebow in, but for Sanchez, you just gave a contract. You can tell he's a little shaky, especially you know these USC guys. You know they can't cut it, but he's a little shaky to begin with. And what do you think about them bringing Tebow in? Is it going to hurt Sanchez?
It's very odd to me. I mean, I love a lot of the things Tebow is and does. I just think if you've invested money in this other guy, especially under the scrutiny he's going to be under anyway, I mean, the hardest thing you can possibly do is put Tim Tebow in the same meeting room and in the same – you know, locker room and all the media. I mean, have you ever had a backup quarterback have a press conference before he even goes to, like, workouts or minicamp? I've never seen anything like it. But I think Tim was going to get that wherever he went. Unless he was the starter, he was going to be that guy to somebody. So
Exactly. Now, Rick, if you go by the Lincoln Tunnel now in New York, there's a huge Tim Tebow billboard. Backup quarterbacks don't have billboards and press conferences. And Rex Ryan just said today he's going to get 20 snaps. You don't see that all over. I just think it's going to hurt. I don't think anything good can come out of it. That's just my opinion. But whatever. Now, listen, I have a question about Peyton Manning now. Because when we talked about interviewing each other, that was before Peyton picked a team. What do you think about him picking Denver? What do you think that's a good fit for him? What do you think with that?
I honestly think it's really good. Fox is great. Elway's great. I mean, you wouldn't want to be around or feel like you could trust guys more than those two for the leadership of the organization. But Peyton does more research than anybody ever has. So this was calculated, and of the options he had, this was the one that felt the best, obviously.
Uh-huh.
But for Denver, you know, not that they wanted to move Tebow out of there or anything, but I mean, you don't even have to explain it now. I mean,
it's Peyton Manning.
You got Peyton Manning. I mean, you know, what you don't know is how much he's got left, not even his age, but, you know, the next thing. I mean, why risk it to the point where, you know, you got crazy downside if something goes bad? But, I mean, you know, I don't know. There's so much, you know, before all the guys switching teams and all the media, you know, like it is now, you know, people stayed put and you played 10 years one place and you kind of had rivalries and all that. So this is just the way it's going to be,
yeah.
You know, guys move around.
Right, I've got a couple of questions for you. Does the whole, because I'll be honest, it bothers me as a huge fan of yours. Does the whole bus thing, does it bother you being called a bus sometimes?
I don't know. I mean, you got to, kind of depends on context and you know, I mean, the people that say it have no idea how hard this job is and stuff. So I mean, it's not what I want to hear, but I mean,
mm-hmm.
Got no idea. I mean, I played 12 years in that league and less of my own terms, and you know, there ain't a whole lot of guys doing that. So
no, exactly. Now, Rick, you leave football. How'd you get into a couple more questions for you? How'd you get into wine? And describe your company and what you're doing now. It's a three-part question. You leave football. How do you get into wine? Describe your company and what you're doing now.
Yeah, well, you know, I after 12 seasons, I'd, you know, gotten to the point where I wasn't 20 anymore. I mean, I had other interests and I have family, and I'd spent some time in the West Coast and enjoyed that, and particularly Northern California, where I did 4 seasons in a row, two with the Niners and 2 with the Raiders. And at the Raiders, we had training camp in Napa, and it, you know,
wine's
a pretty, you know, worldly sort of concept. I mean, I've traveled a lot. We lived in a lot of places in the U.S., but, I mean, you know, food and wine were kind of, you know, something I really developed a passion for. So, as I stayed at home and kind of hung out with my kids and we traveled and did stuff you do when you have a little free time for the first time, you know, that took a couple of years, and then I was kind of like, well, now what? You know, I've got a marketing background from college, you know, had never really utilized that, and I had a great opportunity with a great introduction with a winemaker who's in Napa named Rob Lawson, who, you know, after we met, I mean, it was like, this is a pretty cool opportunity. I mean, we're not trying to reinvent the wine business, but we got our own little twist, and it's not like the celebrity athlete wine concept. I mean, we're more, you know, legitimate, like, want to be accepted by wine geeks first.
Okay.
You know, that's really what we are, and so, you know, it's been very time consuming and challenging and fun and, you know, interesting all in one, and time is flying. I mean, we've got 4, you know, vintages now of Cabernet, and you know, I constantly have people, you know, phone, which is why it's been kind of hard to connect with you. You know, it's just, there's always stuff going on, and you know, I'm off to Atlanta this week, and there's a lot of charity stuff. There's a great big charity event in Atlanta all week, and to participate in that is, you know, maybe like one a month that I can travel for and stuff. Otherwise, it gives me the opportunity to be in business, have something I really enjoy that I'm working on, but also spend, I have 3 little kids, 3 boys, and I get to spend as much time with them as I want to, and I can kind of juggle both. You know, I can handle the business stuff on the email and phone and certain times, and then I can still coach Pop Warner kids and go to baseball games and go to basketball and be dad and all that. So those days are numbered, and then, you know, we're building this thing. By the time my kids are kind of moving on to their own lives, maybe I'll be up in Napa full time, but that's what's happening.
Now, Rick, I'm gonna keep it on for 2 more minutes. I like to do this. I like to ask you quick questions. I want to hear your answer. I'm always curious. Right now, I take Rick Meyer's phone. Besides me, who's the coolest person in your phone right now?
Oh God, I don't know what cool is. I mean,
here we go. You're at a point, 'cause I asked every celebrity, every athlete, every wrestler, rock star, anyone I interviewed, I asked them, you're at a party, you want to impress somebody, besides being Rick Maya, you can pull your phone out, just give us one person that would that can make someone say, wow, you got them on your phone. We've heard answers from Snoop Dogg to everybody. I want to hear who's in your phone, the coolest person.
I don't know. There's some interesting ones in there, but I'm not going to reveal that. I don't know. That's not really my style. There's all kinds of – I don't want to lose the things. I'd hate for people to find some numbers, but – No, I'm pretty private that way. I don't know. I don't talk about.
I respect it. All right, your favorite movie?
Pulp Fiction.
Your favorite food?
You know, I like to get on the grill. I'm a red meat guy. I'd say I'm more of a tri-tip and steaks of any kind and red wine. That's kind of my favorite.
Favorite book? Do you read a lot?
You know, I haven't as much because I've been busy, but the book that really made me want to read books was The Firm. And I finished college and I traveled a bunch and I hadn't really ever, I mean, all those years in college, I mean, I had plenty of other stuff to read and I wasn't a reader like on the side. And I read all the Grisham stuff after that.
All right. Now I'm going to recommend the book. I know everyone's been talking about it. You got to read The Hunger Games. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I do, and that's on deck. Actually, I went to a Navy SEAL event the other night, and the Lone Survivor is another book that I read recently.
That's one of the best books I've ever read in my life.
That's really good too. And the Marcus Luttrell, who was wrote the book, was actually supposed to be at this thing, but something came up with his family. But man, I mean, I'm kind of seduced by some of that military. I mean, I'm in San Diego, and there's a lot of Navy SEAL kind of talk in Camp Pendleton and. So I've got great pride for those.
Now, you said you read the Lone Survivor book?
Yeah, and then they gave it to us the other night, so I'm like, this is the book I love that I do have. But that's why Hunger Games is the other one that came up that people were saying. That's another, like, unbelievable
kind of thing. The Lone Survivor, I'm telling you, I started that book. I actually almost called out of work because that just leaves you. You want to turn to you want to know what happened. So that's one of the best books. I recommend that book to everybody, The Lone Survivor.
Yeah. I don't feel that way about a lot of books, and that one just pulls you in for sure.
All right, a couple more questions. I promise I'll let you go. Why aren't you on Twitter?
You know, my business is I don't. Mirror Wine is on Twitter, and I'm trying to coordinate how to best use my time with some of that stuff. I think through the charity stuff we're doing and the wine business, there's more there than just I don't need the social part.
Okay.
But I understand it. I see it. I get it. Same with Facebook. We have a Facebook account for Mirror Wine Company. But, I don't know. I guess I'm just a little too old, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, all right, I'm going to finish up right now. Do you collect any memorabilia? Like, do you have any memorabilia from when you played or any other different memorabilia do you collect?
I have a lot of stuff. It's really not on display. But what I do think is cool, I have a ton of, like, 60s and 70s, like, vintage rock posters, like original posters and kind of limited edition stuff from the old bands that I've, you know, Zeppelin and Stones and Hendrix and cool stuff like that. So I started collecting that stuff when I got to Seattle, and there was a lot of that Pearl Jam and Nirvana kind of thing going on. And then I just kind of got carried away with all these posters and old jukeboxes and stuff. So that, I don't know, football, I mean, I have a lot of stuff, and now my boys are old enough that there's jerseys and balls and all kinds of cards and everything, but it's really not the way our house looks. We've got more music kind of vibe going.
Okay, now, Rick, two last things for me, and then we actually lost Chuck. I'm just going to put Chuck on right now, and then I have two more final questions for you. Chuck, you're back on, Chuck. I'm sorry we got disconnected. Do you have anything else from Rick Maya before we let him go?
No, I just wanted to say, Rick, at least you left football with your health, but not a lot of people can say that. And what's your best red wine? Because my mom's a red wine lover, so what do you consider your best red wine?
Our 2008 Cabernet Sauvignon is our, I think, of the four we've released, I mean, it's my favorite. Even though the 05, which was our first, kind of like your firstborn, and I'm partial to that one as the first time through it, but I think 08 is our finest.
Okay, well,
check out beerwine.com. It's all there, yeah.
All right, now,
all
Rick,
right,
last
thank
last
you for having
me.
Rick.
Rick, do you collect or do you have any of your starting line of figures? Because you had action figures. I have them, sadly. I know this sounds creepy. Do you have any of your figures still in your house?
Oh, you mean those little like figurine guys?
Yes.
Oh, Yeah, you know, my youngest has a little shelf full, and I'm a couple of the guys on there, like a bobblehead and a little thing where I'm throwing a pass. But I don't know how many there were, but I've got a couple different ones. One of them is actually still in the package.
Yeah,
probably the one
I have
you
the one
talked
in the
about.
Package. Yeah, no, I sound like super creepy. I'm like the guy. I'm like De Niro from The Fan. No, I have two of the starting lineups in the package. There was two at Seattle, one at Notre Dame. All right, Rick, my last question for you is, I asked you this in the emails. I'm not a memorabilia guy. I have two seats from Yankee Stadium, and I have a few jerseys of, like, I'm pretty good friends with Matt Schaub and Chris Canty from University of Virginia, so I have their jerseys in my house. I'm going to send you a jersey. Would you sign it for me, personalize it for me, so I can hang it in my house?
Yeah, absolutely. No problem.
Now, what would you want to sign? Because, sadly, I have your Notre Dame jersey, your Seahawk jersey, a Bears jersey. Which jersey would you prefer to sign?
Got to go Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, I'd pick them first, but Seattle's fine. That's my first place, but whatever you want, that's
Rick, listen to me. Thank
easy.
You so much. This was beyond a privilege and an honor to interview you, and when I hang up, just email me where I can send the jersey, okay?
You got it. All right, guys.
Rick, thank you so much, buddy.
Okay, have a good one.
See you later, bro. Bye. Wow. Chuck, what happened to your phone, first of all?
I don't know. I kept just going, boop, and it just hung up. Twice it happened, and I didn't touch it.
Listen to me. We've interviewed a lot of people. I was nervous interviewing Rick Meyer.
He's a really good guy.
All right. Two bad things for Rick Meyer. One, he calls in, so now I have his personal home phone number. So that can't be good. So Rick Meyer is going to be getting a call when I'm in New Orleans this weekend. That's a fact. It's funny, Chuck. What?
Kind of feel bad for that guy.
It's funny. I had, I have Schaub and Canty's number, obviously. But anyone who calls in, Orton, Hazleton, Josh Booty, Tim Couch, Meyer, you can't call our radio show private. So the phone number comes up. So these poor guys, we have their phone numbers now. This is poor. This,
I mean,
no,
they better
phone call
in. At least text them.
All right, Chuck, let me hear, before I let you go, because I'm still nervous, I'm still excited. I want to do a Final Four show, and I'm actually going to get on. It looks like Tony Delk or Ron Mercer from the 96 or 98 teams. I've been emailing them back.
Right?
What?
Number 00, right?
Of course. 6-3 pointers against Syracuse in 96. He's going to come on. We're going to do a whole Final Four show. We're going to try to – Tim Couch actually set that up. He gave me Delk's number. We've been going back and forth. We're going to get Delk on the phone, talk about – I'm a little down on him because they were all congratulating Pitino. Because Pitino coached them, which doesn't make me happy because I hate Pitino. But, Chuck, let me hear your prediction. We're going to get another one later on in the week. I want to hear your prediction for real. You've been spot on with almost all your picks. Give me first the game I can care less about. I want to play Kansas because I think Kansas is garbage. I think they overachieved. Ohio
exactly.
State, who do you like?
Okay, well, first of all, that game right there has the best matchup, I feel like. It's going to be Thompson versus Sullinger, and that's probably the best matchup you can get. And I think that Ohio State's probably going to win, but you never know. But I'm going to go Ohio State 67-63. Just because Sullivan just to dominate. And they didn't have him last time when Kansas beat him.
See, no one, everyone keeps saying, oh, Kansas beat him. Yeah, I know, but Sullivan didn't play. And listen, Kansas overachieved, and they don't have that good of an offense. They, in a dream scenario.
Robinson, it's going to be done.
Exactly. And Kentucky played Kansas at the beginning of the year, first game of the year at Madison Square Garden. I was there. I lost my voice for 4 days. Phenomenal game. I don't think Kansas...
You met a great family there, too.
I did. I met the whole family. The family drove me home and everything. They're going to New Orleans, and I've been emailing them, see if I can kind of crash with them one night in New Orleans. We're going to get to that in a show, I think,
guy's
Thursday
daughter,
night.
Right?
What?
Get the guy's daughter, right?
Chuck, I'll hang out with the guy's son. I don't care if I can hang out in Kentucky. Now, Chuck, the game that I care about, and basically you kind of care about it because of our friendship, and you know how I'll be on suicide watch.
Yeah, I don't want you going suicide on me.
We almost did it last year. Let me hear about Kentucky-Louisville. Because now, Chuck,
first point out, great job by Calipari putting Anthony Davis on Perry Jones, shutting him out for the first half. Great job. And, okay. So Louisville, Kentucky, you're kind of scared. They run a 2-3 zone, which is that. I think that's gonna kind of hurt Kentucky. But listen, they're too fucked. They're too big, and like Russ Smith is great, but he's undersized, and so is Silva. So I don't know. They're just too small for me. I just don't see them driving the lane and putting up a shot with Davis there. Barring foul trouble, that Kentucky will win this, I think, pretty comfortably, too, by 12 points.
Now, Chuck, here's what gets me nervous. I'll tell you a couple of things. And I want to do a huge, because you're one of the only few people. Right now, Chuck, here's what bothers me.
Why is he not shaving the eyebrow?
Chuck, we'll get to that in a second. You're one of the only people, I really mean this, and I'm not knocking other people because other people have lives, I guess. Everyone right now is a Final Four. Oh, did you see this game? Everyone in the world knows. You and I, Chuck, are up until 4 o'clock in the morning texting each other when Appalachian State plays Hawaii. We watch every game. We really take pride in, hey, Chuck, Montana's playing Nevada, and we can name the starting five on both teams. It's something we do. You're one of the only people. That's why when Tony Dell comes on and we do a Final Four show, I want you to, you know, actually make the 3-minute drive to my house. I got you another mic. We'll do the show together. You told me the whole year, and this is from game one to game 37-38 Kentucky's in, you said no one can beat Kentucky except Syracuse because of that zone. Now Louisville plays the zone. That's why I'm scared. How are you not scared?
Well, this is the difference. I think Syracuse has a lot of length compared to Louisville. You look at, first of all, Fab Melo and Andy Davis, that's a loss right there. I feel like, you know, they're just the same size. Chris Joseph would go Gilchrist, you know? And you got they just got so much different size. Russ Smith's a great player, and so is Siva, but they're just not as big as, the backcourt for Syracuse. Not even close. That's why Syracuse get more length, and they usually get out deeper. You can't shoot a three, you know. I think Syracuse dominates that defense, and Louisville is just too short. I feel like
Chuck,
they're gonna put up a fight, but I just don't see it happening unless you guys get into foul trouble and you guys go into that shooting where you just can't shoot the ball.
When I'll tell you this, Chuck, when the bracket
but no one's guarding Davis' team. No one's
no
Davis.
One. When the bracket came out, I want you to give me props on this one. Everyone, every ESPN analyst, every one of our friends, oh, Kentucky has the hottest bracket. And I called you up. I said, Chuck, hear me out.
I think they did.
Yeah, and I said, Chuck, just hear me out. It's named UConn, Duke, all these team names. The only team I said that scared me in the whole thing was Baylor. And
Especially because
you like Baylor. They're big. They're athletic. Jones played.
And they're
like
a good tournament team. They always play in the tournament.
So now Kentucky's playing Baylor, and I was scared, of course. I'm scared every time Kentucky plays. But I'm watching Florida-Louisville. I said, you know what? I want to play Louisville because Florida lives by the three, and they die by three. They'll go out there and knock down 11 of them. I'm like, holy shit. So now I'm like, you know what? I'm pulling for Louisville. Louisville wins. I'm excited. 2 seconds later, I'm like, holy shit. This gives Rick Pitino 1 week to coach against. Chuck, they hate each other. Pitino and Calipari.
That's going to be the interesting part. That's going to be fun watching ESPN this whole week. That whole, how they go. This is for recruiting, too. Whoever wins this game is going to get the recruits.
Chuck, this is ESPN, Dick Vitale, Francesa, Michael. Everyone said this is one of the biggest Final Four games ever.
Yeah, just because of the coaches. You never see something like that, really. It's usually because of the players, but it's the coaches.
Exactly. It's usually, we're going to watch Kid Gilchrist versus this one. We're going to watch, Carmelo versus this one. The coaches make – these are two of the best coaches. They hate each other. They really hate each other. There's
the
so much animosity. And this is the fact. I actually wanted to say this. Everyone always says, this team travels great. I was reading – I think it was in New York Times yesterday – that during NCAA tournament games, the Lexington, Kentucky, the most plane tickets and bus tickets, hotels are booked from there. Kentucky travels better than any other country. They call it Catlanta. Any other team in the country, Kentucky travels better than them. It's a fact.
That's pretty cool.
The fact that Kentucky-Louisville, Chuck, when these teams play each other, this is all facts. Because, I subscribe to Kentucky newspaper. I listen to Kentucky radio. They have to have no cops, firemen. No one's allowed to have off when they play each other because they're so nervous about the this is bigger than the Yankee Red Sox down there.
Hey, there's nothing. What else does Kentucky have to root for? Nothing. There's no teams.
Exactly. Now, would you be beyond stunned if Kentucky loses?
Yes.
Chuck,
I think I would.
You're one of the only people I can have a legitimate conversation with because everyone else is just haters. Everyone else has fucking 67 other teams they're rooting for just so Kentucky doesn't win.
The only thing I'm scared about is, look at last year.
I know.
UConn was pretty much a no-name team, really, and then all of a sudden they got hot in the Big East tournament. They won the Big East tournament, and then they just never lost in the tournament. That's the only thing Louisville got going for them. kind of the same route. They weren't that big of a team going into the Big East tournament.
Chuck,
won
that's
that,
what I want to
have the momentum. That's the only thing you got to be scared of.
I actually, we only have like 2 minutes, 3 minutes left. I actually, first of all, I want to thank you again for doing the show. I can't wait to do the Final Four show with you.
I forgot how fun this was. It's fun.
Yeah, well, it's about time you woke up in time. But here's my last thing, my last point, and then we're going to break it down big time. Wednesday night I have my fantasy baseball draft, big time, and I think Thursday or Friday we'll do a huge Final Four show. I'm going to try to get two or three guests lined up. I have the Kentucky guy lined up. I'm going to try to get a guy. I really don't know anyone from Kansas or Ohio State, but we'll try to pull some out of our ass. But, Chuck, here's my one worry.
Don't know anything about him. The kid from Wagner,
you know what?
Christian
Hanna. You know what? That's what we're going to get. We'll get Christian Hanna. He'll do the Ohio State angle. Who cares about Kansas? That's what we're going to do. But, Chuck, here's my one thing. You said it perfectly. Last year, Kentucky was going in there hot. Remember, last year, Kentucky didn't play as a team. The big problem is 2 years ago when they had John Wall, Cousins, it was all about, okay, we're going to the NBA. Who gives a shit? Same with this team. This team's going to have five guys drafted, but it seems they want to win. They're playing a team, Louisville, who is average the whole year. All of a sudden, they win the Big East tournament like the Huskies did last year. They come out of nowhere. They run the tape. Holy shit, this is deja vu all over again. Kentucky.
It could, but they're going to have to be one of the best teams in the last 10 years, I think.
Chuck, I've been watching every Kentucky game since 92, and I've never seen a team like this. All right, so, Chuck, we're going to break it down big time. You're going to have a little bit of homework. Here's your homework, Chuck. Your homework's going to do, obviously, I'm going to take over the Kentucky angle. I want you to do some research on Louisville. Not that you need to, because you know all your shit already. We'll get Christian Hanna on the phone. Maybe I'll have all you guys come over to my house. The audience wants to know, Chuck, we have hundreds of listeners right now. I think we're at 667. I want to know right now, will you make the 4-minute drive to my house to do the show with me Thursday night?
It's questionable, but yes, I'll be there.
Chuck, you guys, get off your ass, Chuck. All right, Chuck. Thank you for doing the show. Thank you, Rick Meyer. I know we have callers calling in. I wasn't going to have Rick Meyer answer questions. He's a little private. I'm down on Rick Meyer. He didn't tell me the coolest person in his phone. That bothered me a little bit.
And he didn't splurge, really, so he's not a splurger.
Chuck, will you go on mirrorwine.com and buy the lovely...
I'm
going to
give my mom a bottle of wine. She loves red wine.
Nice. Chuck, say goodbye to everybody. I just want to thank you for doing the show.
See you guys later, you internet motherfuckers.
Thank you for doing the show. Listen, everyone else, I'm going to end the show with my old Kentucky home, the Kentucky song when they win the national title.
Oh, man.